from audio speakers view. Screen. Adam, hi Josh. Who else we got there? Hey y'all, Aaron, how's everybody? I can't hear everybody. I can't, some people are muted. Hey Adam, you're back.
Here, I can't hook my camera.
Okay. Can y'all hear me okay?
Yeah, how you doing?
Okay.
Yes, I can.
Okay. That's a later slide. Here, hold on 1 second. I'll be right back. Okay, you can see the slideshow then, right? It's good?
Yep, we can see it.
Okay, so 1 second. What else do I want? Okay, so we'll start because there's a lot. I'm going to cover what I can cover. What I can't cover, I won't cover. Hey, Lib, how are you? I can't hear you, but I can see that you're there. You can wave. Oh, I can't hear you. Okay. If you want to talk, just let me know. But otherwise, I guess everyone will just like mute themselves and whatever, and we'll go. I hope everybody's doing okay. For many people, this is going to be the first time that they are having a Seder. First time leading a Seder. There are some people, I don't know if it applies to anyone who's tuning in. Hey, Josh, I haven't seen you in a long time. How are you?
I'm doing very well.
So nice. It's one of the nice things about this. I was speaking with Rabbi Tabori today. He said, on the one hand, you know, we're all cooped up. But on the other hand, it's a lot of fun to see people we haven't seen in a long time. So that's great. And especially different countries and whatever. It's really nice. So we have England, Canada, and the U.S. I don't know if everyone else is tuning in. It's pretty late for Israel. But let's go. So some people are going to be leading a Seder for the first time. And it can be a little daunting experience. I think I led a Seder the first time, probably when I was in college and I came back and my dad said, you take over, because my dad was not, maybe in high school, my dad wasn't a very knowledgeable person religiously, and he felt like he would rather have his kids take over. The first time I really kind of was excited about it was, I think, when we branched off on our own and I had my own family. My little kids, and it was a lot of fun. Probably one of the most interesting Seders I had was before we had children. My wife, we were just been married, and my wife was pregnant, and a friend of ours, Rabbi Herzl Hefter, if you know who he is, Herzl Hefter invited us for Seder with his wife. We had a couple of random soldiers popped in. I think the Seder ended at 4 in the morning because both wives were pregnant at the time. And by 4 in the morning, we had reached the limit that they could handle. You don't have to go to 4 in the morning. The truth of the matter is, if you do the whole text of the Seder, we're going to go through an abridged version to say what you really have to do. But you can do more, or you can do less. Remember the Mishnah says, Kol hamar be'el seper yitzav Mitzrayim harayz mishubach, that it's considered praiseworthy to say as much as possible. So let's go on. Oh, the mitzvot of the night. So besides halakat nerot and getting those things ready, you should just know that there are two Torah mitzvot, that is eating matzah and telling the story. Some people might get confused and think telling the story is less important, but telling the story is actually a fulfillment of a mitzvah from the Torah. Certainly, it's interesting with the way I've listened to a few other people, the way they've addressed it running a Seder. One of the more right-wing people that I know spoke and said how women are obligated in all the mitzvot of the night, which is not necessarily agreed upon by everyone, but it's certainly agreed upon by enough. So eating matzah and telling the story are the two mitzvot that you have to fill from the Torah today, because we don't have a Korban Pesach. And the rabbinic mitzvot of the night are drinking the four cups of wine, eating the maror, the bitter herbs, and singing Hallel. It's interesting, I put leaning as a question mark for those people who are into Gemara learning. There's a famous discussion by Rav Chaim and then his son, the Brisker Rav, on whether or not leaning is a separate fulfillment of the mitzvah or it's a separate mitzvah. But in any event, those are the mitzvot of the night. It's important to have a good Haggadah. In a minute, I'm going to talk about downloading some free ones if you don't have. But you should have a Hebrew-English Haggadah. They have to have good instructions. It's worthwhile before the Seder to skim through whichever Haggadah you're going to use and make sure that it has good instructions. I like ones with pictures. In fact, I'm going to show you 1 second. I guess we own of like fancy Haggadot, probably 25 or something. This is one of my favorites. You can see it's called a collection of different Haggadot and different pictures. So it's a classic one from Europe. It has my underlinings on it. And it's a lot of fun. But here's the thing, is a Haggadah with extensive commentaries like one like this is really good before the Seder. So in the next week or so, to embellish the Seder and make it more fun and more interesting, it's worthwhile reviewing all kinds of texts and whatnot. But at the Seder itself, it's really helpful to have an easy one that you can skim through. And my daughter's bat mitzvah a number of years ago, we decided to give out as the gift, not benchers, but to give out Haggadot. So that was a lot of fun. And we made extra Haggadot for us. So we have the whole family has enough Haggadot. I think we have like 25 of them or 30 of them. We usually this year we're going to have 10 of us at the Seder. That's only the immediate family, myself and my kids, who are all isolated in this house and have almost not left for like almost 3 weeks now. But in any event, the having a Haggadah with that's easy to go through, I think is very helpful. There are many Haggadot you can download for free, and I'm going to talk about a couple in a second. And if you need to, any part of the Seder that you say in English is perfectly fine. I mean, if you're French and you want to say it in French, you could say it in French as well, or Chinese, Swahili, whatever it is. It doesn't matter if that's your language. That's perfectly fine, including the brachot and whatnot. You can say anything you want in English. Here is a list of a few Haggadot. I'm happy to share this afterwards. The Jewish Agency on their website, and you can just do a Google search for it, or afterwards I'll post to the sources. They have a website dedicated to free Haggadot. So those you can download and print for free. Two of the ones I listed here is Chabad also offers a Hebrew-English Haggadah. They offer it in English, only in English. They offer it in Hebrew-English, and they offer it only in Hebrew. Same Haggadah. Which is quite nice of them, and PDF ready to print out. And something really special, I think, I saw someone say this radically changed the Passover experience for Americans and for English-speaking community. I don't know if that's true, but it was very helpful for me. I love this Haggadah. This is called A Different Night. And right now, it's put out by the Hartman's Institute. It's full of all kinds of great stuff. It has, let me see if I can find the, it has paintings. It has a whole series of different versions of the four sons. Here's some really fun ones, whether they be artistic or classic Zionist, anti-Zionist. It's a funny anti-Zionist. You can tell the anti-Zionist won by the way it looks. Someone who likes card playing. But this Haggadah is wonderful. It is both user-friendly for people who are traditional, and it's user-friendly for people who are not traditional. But it's chock full of stuff. And right now it's free. So you can download the whole thing at Haggadah, whatever it is, says there on the thing. And I will post that later as well. It's super helpful. Some of the stuff I'm going to talk about tonight is coming out from that Haggadah. It's not written for people who necessarily want to follow halakha, but it's halakhically friendly. So part of what I'm going to deal with in a few minutes is based on a position brought down, and not in the original, but in the teacher's guide, the leader's guide, which I don't know if it's online there. And the leader's guide has a really abridged Haggadah you can do to fill halakha. And we'll see if we, when we talk about, I'm going to base part of what I'm talking about on that. Let's talk about just the tools. It's important beforehand to have some plan the day before, 2 days before. I know shopping is right now extremely difficult for people. We're trying not to go to the store if we can avoid it. We made some online orders. They were imperfect. But you know, the online order here, you could tick a box that said please don't substitute other things, and they just kind of ignored that and substitute whatever they wanted to, including non-kosher Passover stuff, whatever. We'll survive. We're doing a few runs here and there, but you should set the table nicely. The Shulchan Aruch actually says you should have your finest silver there. And whatever. Some people are going to have, if they have large seders, which this year I don't know is going to happen, just because every country that I hear, there's like in Israel, I don't know if people heard, but Bibi Netanyahu, the prime minister, got up and said this year should be HaSeder Shel HaSeger, which means the seder which you're closed and locked in. So he said only do seder with a few people this year for the first time in a long time. My in-laws are not going to be with us. They'll be by themselves. That's, you know, one of the wonderful things about the seder is the intergenerational religious and educational experience. And that piece is missing, which is difficult. We're going to try and arrange, like so many people have said, kind of something beforehand. But we're not sure exactly when that's going to take place. Some people have suggested calling. I saw the chief rabbi of England said this, and I saw the Rav Ramon said maybe calling your in-laws, calling the grandparents 2 hours before the Seder starts. I'm not sure their experience, but 2 hours before our Seder starts, we're usually running around like crazy, making sure we can start the Seder. So I don't know if that's possible, but we might try and do it a few hours before, the day before, something like that. So you should wear nice clothing. I saw on one website that pointed out you should make sure you have a corkscrew. The worst thing happens is come to the Seder and not be able to open any of the bottles of wine. That's kind of a funny thing, but indeed that can happen. One thing I want to say, I spoke, and it's on the Eretz Pod, our podcast today. The Aliyah for today talks about the clothing of the high priest of the Kohen Gadol. And I really do think that the clothing you wear changes the experience. I mentioned in that piece this afternoon that the Netziv, the famous Rosh Hashiva of Yeshiva Chai in Berlin, or Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, so he said that the custom of wearing a kittel, a white garment, at the Seder is because eating at the Seder is like eating at the table with God. And if that's the case, so it's appropriate to wear your best clothes. And I think it really changes the experience. Even where people are totally locked in, they're not going to synagogue to pray, they're by themselves, but changing into proper Yom Tov clothing, Shabbat clothing, fancy clothing, I think can really have a huge impact. Let's talk about what has to be planned like a couple days before to make sure you have everything you need. Every night, per person, you really need to have 3 matzahs. Regular matzahs that you buy, if they're Streitz matzahs in America or Manischewitz in America, in Israel, there are Yehuda matzahs are the common ones. In England, I don't know what the ones are. In Canada, I don't know. Whatever they are, any kosher matzah, which is kosher Passover, and certified kosher Passover, you really can use. However, it's preferable, according to the position of the various Rishonim and commentators, that you should have matzahs which are called shmurah matzahs. And people get confused and think that means hand matzah. It doesn't mean hand matzah. You can have machine matzah as well. What it means is that from the time of harvesting, that the wheat was protected and specially guarded to make sure it did not become chametzdik, and it was specially designed for the Seder. That's preferable. If you can't get that, you can't get that, and you can rely on the leniencies. I heard Rosh Schechter, even at YU, said, you know, this year, of course, because it's so hard to rely on leniency, that was one of the things that the store substituted for us, is that we ordered the shmurah matzahs, and they sent non-shmurah matzah, but my next-door neighbor markets in shmurah matzah, so I just keep going upstairs and getting more boxes of hand shmurah matzah, but it doesn't have to be hand matzah. I originally wasn't going to have a hand matzah, but because we're on shmurah matzah, that's machine, we went with the hand matzah. You're going to need about 3 per person per night. In Israel, that's only one night, so you only need 3 per person once. In Chutz Aretz, outside of Israel, you could do the math, it would be you need 6 approximately. You can get away with a little less, but it's preferable to have that amount. Wine or grape juice, you have to have enough for 4 cups. What?
That's the question?
Somehow or other, I don't... let me see. Who is that?
Adam. Hi.
Yeah.
You say 3 matzot per person per night. Are you talking about to make here, or are you talking about to have like the 3 whole matzot to start?
No, for the amount you need to eat, you're going to need approximately that amount.
Okay.
Everybody doesn't have to have. There are different customs on whether or not everyone at the Seder has their own 3, or whether or not only the person kind of leading the Seder has 3. My family, we have a hybrid custom. Whoever demands 3 gets 3. Whoever doesn't want 3, and sometimes the people who don't want 3 specifically don't get 3. However, it works out depending on, you know, which side of the more traditional feel they feel that they're doing. But whatever, that's neither here nor there. But you need approximately 3 per person. Certainly, if they're machine matzah, that's for sure true. If they're hand matzah, it could be a good way with a little less. In regards to wine and grape juice, there are different quantities. The Rav Chaim Na'eh is the name that's associated with the more lenient amount. He suggests approximately 3 ounces, really around 2.9 ounces. That's all you really need to have. Some people like to have larger cups, etc. But if you do, you have to remember when you drink, you have to drink the majority of the cup. If the cup is 3 ounces, you're drinking the majority of 3 ounces, you're drinking 1.6 ounces, that's actually not very much wine. I always like, you know, if you think about a standard can of Coke is about 12 ounces. So you're talking about the cup has to be 1/4 of a can of Coke, and you have to drink 1/2 of that. So it's really not that much. It's preferable to drink the whole cup, but if not, you can do that. It's preferable to have wine. If wine doesn't do it for you, then you can go with grape juice. Maybe you mix wine and grape juice. If that doesn't do it for you, go with grape juice. You know, I have wine, but, you know, that's me, and I have a very big cup. But the goal is you should not drink so much that it affects your thinking, but it's more fun. Okay. Then the Seder plate, we're going to get to the things you're going to need the day before. As you have an egg, the egg should be boiled. You can also roast it. The way you would roast it is you can just take tongs and put it on the gas burner if you have a gas burner. If you don't boil it first and you do that, it will burst, which is okay too. But, you know, just know that it's going to probably burst. I know someone who has a custom of taking a boiled egg and then soaking it in tea because the tea makes it discolored so it looks roasted, whatever floats your boat. You need to have some roasted bone or something like that. That, you know, sometimes in years past, it was easy to go to the grocery store and just get a bone from a piece of rib or something. It doesn't have to. The egg and the bone are a custom. Really, you have to have two cooked items, which are really supposed to be the meal, as we'll get to. We see the state of plate in a second. Then you have to have some sort of vegetable that you would say a bere priya de ma bracha on. So that could be all kinds of things, parsley, celery, carrots, potatoes, bananas, peppers, whatever. I'm going to talk about the amount of that in a minute. You need to have something for maror, some sort of sharp, bitter vegetable like romaine lettuce and or horseradish. In my family, we mix it. Usually it's pretty potent. There's a little discrepancy on how to prepare it. I can tell you a secret that if you grind fresh ground horseradish, if you put a little bit of vinegar, a tiny drop of vinegar in the horseradish 3 seconds after you grind it, 3 to 4 seconds, then the enzymes in the horseradish start, what reason the horseradish is so harsh is the enzymes start to come out of the cut root, and the little bit of vinegar will stop the enzymes from totally coming out, in which case it's extremely potent at 3 seconds with a little bit of horseradish, with a little bit of vinegar, but you don't have to do that. It's very, very harsh. It's interesting. There's a disagreement between some of the postgame on whether or not it should be harsh or not harsh. You can make your own decision on that. Salt water should be prepared before the Seder for Karpas. That's quoted again in the various postgame. You should just make sure you have the salt water prepared before. It's always a big deal in our house. We have these fancy, nice glass bowls we use every year. Haroset also needs to be prepared before. The common Ashkenazi version is apples, cinnamon, nuts, and wine. It doesn't have to be. It has to be something, some mixture of fruits and something with a little bit of potency to it, like wine, vinegary, that you can dip the second set of dipping during the night. And then you have to have food. Okay, let's go on and talk about Erev Tavshilin. This does not apply to those in Israel for the first night of Pesach, which is a Wednesday night, or the last night of Pesach either, which will be Wednesday night. But it does apply to those who live outside of Israel. In almost every Haggadah, at the very beginning, I'll even take a different night. I didn't glance if they have it, but they probably do. There is the explanation on how to make an Erev Tavshilin. Basically, Erev Tavshilin is you take two cooked items, an egg and a piece of matzah is kind of like the classic version, and you set them aside and you recite. There's a little passage you recite to say that this is an Eruv that will allow you to cook from Friday for Shabbat. Otherwise, you would not be allowed to cook from Friday until Shabbat. You read the blessing as declaration and you're all good. And you simply put it in the fridge to wait for Shabbat. The Seder plate. There are different versions of the Seder plate and which places everything goes on. But it's important to remember the Seder plate was supposed to be the platter of the meal. So in a certain sense, the egg and the little shank bone there, which there's a chicken bone, if you notice, they have a drawing on this one I got, where there's a chicken bone as opposed to the roasted piece of meat. Those were really the meal. If you look in the Mishnah Rav had rice and beets. So he didn't have an egg and he didn't have a shank bone. He had rice and beets. So these are not these are not things which, if you don't have them, it's of critical importance. You're a vegetarian and you don't want to have a piece of meat on your Seder plate. So you could put a carrot, I don't know, roast a piece of carrot and make it look like whatever. Something like that. Was there a question? You can fly the question, I guess. Is there a question?
Yes, there is. This is Josh.
Yeah, Josh.
Okay, so I thought that there was a custom of not eating roast meat on Pesach.
Yeah.
If this is all meant to be like a Seder plate for Pesach, how would you go around? Like, I'm imagining, like, it seems like the whole idea of roasting the shank bone specifically would be counter to what we're trying to do here?
It's a great question. There's an Ashkenazi minhag not to have roasted meat. Some Sephardim actually do have roasted meat. Usually one of although now it's really common, but one of the exciting things about the various stores in Israel is they often have sheep, quarters of sheep available at this time, because a lot of Sephardim want a quarter of sheep to roast it. Then it's really, you definitely cannot signal it as we get later on the Seder, and it says, like, you pick up the matzah and say, this is what our ancestors ate, the very end of the Seder. You don't say that about the shank bone. So if you did have roasted shank bone, there is a custom not to eat it. If you had a piece of chicken that's roasted, it's totally fine, because that's chicken and that wouldn't be it. But yeah, if you have a roasted rib or something, so you just can't pick it up and say that's what this is. But there is an Ashkenazi custom not to make it look like you're eating a sacrifice today, when we don't have sacrifices. You'll notice this Seder plate, the way I'm facing it, which I guess it probably appears to you guys as well, is the closest thing to you is Maror, and the furthest thing away from you is Karpas. That probably is the opposite of what would be best. It's important to notice, I put down, if you notice that it says here, let's say just my ease, right here, I don't know if you can see the cursor. Can y'all just sort of nod if you can see the cursor? Yeah. Okay. It doesn't have to be a special one for Passover. We don't use them. We have a beautiful white plate with glass bowls. It's not, doesn't have any of the markings on it. We just mark it, or we just put it down ourselves. And that's the stuff that we actually use at the Seder. So the maror we use, the horseradish is in there as well. We also have an extra bit as well, because there's usually too many people for the what will fit on the Seder plate. But the two major ways to do a Seder plate, one of them is the opposite, kind of opposite of what you see here, whereas Karpas would be closest to you. And the thing, then you have the things in order of the way you eat them. It's funny, I was looking at one of the Sephardic postgame in his Shulchan Aruch, and he points out that the Sephardic custom is not to put the matzahs underneath the Seder plate. Like, some Seder plates are multi-leveled, and he points out, well, that's Ashkenazi. We Sephardim don't do that. There are Ashkenazim who didn't like that either. The Chai Adam does not like separating the matzahs. But in any event, putting them in the direction of closest to you is, I think, the most common custom brought down Shulchan Aruch. There are other Kabbalistic ones, which have different pieces in different places representing different sefirot. And this might follow the Kabbalistic custom. I don't know. This is just one I yanked off the internet because it looked pretty and clear. But you'd have the charoset, and you have they have two types of mara. You really only have to have one, although many people have the minhag. Like my family, we eat both lettuce and the horseradish, so we have both. But you only need one of those, really, for the Seder. Let's go quickly through amounts. Wine, as I said, should be 4 cups, 3 ounces each. You should drink most of the cup, which would be 1.5 plus ounces. Or if you have larger ones, that's fine too. But then you should still drink most of the cup if you have a large one. If it's a really big cup, you're okay if you just drink the majority of 3 ounces. So as long as you drink 1.5 ounces, 1.5 plus ounces per Seder, then you're good. Also, like I said, it's funny, I was listening to someone who in general is probably much more right wing than I am say he always has grape juice at the Seder. If wine doesn't do it for you, like I know of Benny Flanser in the yeshiva, he says he gets headaches from it, so he doesn't do it. When I was more zealous, younger rabbinic type, like in Kollel, I was much more of a zealot, and today I've just gotten worn down. In any event, you don't have to have wine if you don't want to. We just have grape juice at the most. It's interesting, really it's preferable based on a verse in Mishlei to have red wine or reddish wine, unless you really like white wine better. The Mishnah Brura points out, unless of course there are pogroms. In places where there were pogroms on Pesach, it's best to have white wine so no one accuses you of anything. But that type of issue we haven't had to deal with. We have had to deal with people who are not so pro the Jews complaining about the present disease and the Jewish people. But again, you can use red wine. Matzah. The first one, if you're using machine matzah, you really should, for mochi matzah, you should have 1/2 to 3/4 of a machine. If you're using hand matzah, it's about 1/2 of hand matzah. That's for mochi. For the sandwich, which you have with maror, you would have 1/2 of a machine matzah. And for afikom, and again, 1/2 to 3/4. I'm going to tell you, be honest with you. There are postgame who say, come on, this is just crazy. And they suggest that smaller amounts are also okay. Shlomo Zalman Orbach, he's not exactly liberal. Shlomo Zalman Orbach, Zilin Bracha, said that an olive size is perfectly fine. So that I have in print. But again, the popular definition of the proper amount would be about 1/2 to 3/4 of a machine matzah for mochi matzah for the very first one, and 1/2 matzah for the sandwich for korech, and 1/2 to 3/4, a larger amount for the afikomen. Remember, the afikomen is also, we're not sure if the first matzah or the last matzah is the diraita. Maror, 2 leaves of lettuce would be fulfill your maror requirement. Oh, one thing I wanted to get to is I don't mention here about karpas. I left that off. Karpas. Commonly in the Haggadot, especially Ashkenazi Haggadot, they tell you that karpas should be, for the first dipping, karpas should be less than a kazait. So a little teeny bit of karpas. That's great. The reason is to avoid any confusion of brachot. The Rambam did not agree with that. The Rambam says you should have at least a kazait, the exact opposite position. The Vilna Gaon follows him. What does that mean? So you often hear people say only have a kazait, but I think more and more it's popular for people to follow the Rambam simply because if you're going to have a long discussion at the Haggadah, so you're going to be hungry, and it's only going to push you to go faster if you don't eat something. So more and more people are having large vegetable platters. That's totally, I think that's totally fine. And that's not an issue. Lean to the left. What we usually do in my house is we try and have as many people can have second chairs as possible and put a pillow on it. There I have a real picture of the way Romans really used to lean sitting on a couch, and I don't know if anyone does that. And you can see a proper picture of leaning. I'm not saying no one, but people I know mostly don't do that. It also is important, the position was very important, where you sat on these couches was meaningful. So there's the middle table, you can see the table, and that would be the platter be taken off. That would be the Pesach plate, the Seder plate, and servants would take this off and put new things on, take this off, put new things on. And where you sat closest to the leader was important. So if you're here, that would be the leader, and this, so that was like the pole position of the most important. Okay, nonetheless. Let's talk about going through the Seder. Here's the things that we all know that we say when we get to the beginning of the Seder. You don't have to say this, but it's in all the Haggadot. Listing what exactly is a Seder is this order. Many people probably know it from the time they were little kids. Kadesh, Orchatz, Karpas, Yachatz, Magid, Rachsa, Motzi, Matza, Mara, Korach, Shulchan, Aruch, Tafun, Berach, Halal, and Nirta. In regards to these, we'll talk about a little bit of them in a second when I'm going to show you the briefest version of the Seder. Let's talk about what you have to do to fulfill a proper Seder. So Kiddush and Shechianu. Now Kiddush should be done after nightfall. I know that some places and old age homes and people eat early, and there was a discussion in Israel about delaying the change of the clock. The fight over changing the clock has to do with the Seder starting later, even though it's all kind of, I guess, a mental fiction. One thing that my family are extremely cautious about doing is we all try and take naps. So we get up at a decent time before the Seder to take care of everything and then make sure everyone gets like a, we try and have like a 2 hour period or an hour and a half period where everyone lies down before the Seder. Not all the kids fall asleep, but at least they're kind of rested. Then when you get to the Seder, you can delay starting until nightfall. Again, Israel, it seems they're going to delay, but they couldn't because there are too many complicated electronic devices were contingent in the government's office, and they would have to do too much computer programming for some reason to fix it. So they did not delay the changing of the clock. Therefore, in America, America time, I know it's 7 hours. In England, I think it's probably still 2 hours, but it's going to be very behind Israel. Israel's going very late. Okay, so this is what you have to do in order to do a Seder. I'll walk through it. Anything that's added in Haggadah is also perfectly fine. Those things that are in bullet points are critical and required. Those things which are in hyphens are not required. Even a couple things on here which are required. This is based on, again, this is based on this Haggadah. In the middle, there is a the person who put the teacher or the leader's guide together sat down with Rabbi Verhaftig, who was a major posek in Jerusalem. He's the one who gives the if I'm not mistaken, he gives the he approves of the program. He runs he's the ultimate authority for the program at Nishmat. He's a major from a family of major poskim, and this is basically what he said you have to do. So if you're with cranky relatives that want to get to the food already, you can speed up. If you yourself are cranky, you can speed up. If you want to take longer in certain sections, you can, but let's just go through it. So Kiddush and Shechianu Bracha, and you'll drink the wine and lean to the left. So think about leaning to the left. It's brought down in the Shulchan Aruch that if you don't lean to the left for any of the cups, certainly one and two, then you have to go back and do it again. Between three and four, you shouldn't, and certainly after four, you can't. That's what Shulchan Aruch says. However, as we saw before about leaning, we don't really do it exactly the way the Romans do. So the question is, why do we lean at all? The Aruch HaShulchan suggests the reason we lean today is just as another example of doing things in a different way. So we can fill Ma'ish Tanah Lazeh. So why is this night so different? We wear different clothing. We wear the kittel. We lean to the left. We dip all the time, all this stuff. If that's the case, the at least some Ashkenazi authorities said, really today, if you're trying to eat a dignified meal, you wouldn't lean at all. That's the famous Rav Yah. Rav Yah says that. That's kind of the reason that some people say, well, even women today, it should lean. Maybe they don't lean because of the Rav Yah. So one could always rely on the Rav Yah. If you said Kiddush, you forgot to lean, and you don't want to start drinking again, you can rely on the Rav Yah, and you're sitting properly at a table. That's okay. You don't have to lean. You don't have to lean again and drink another cup of wine. Especially if you're drinking wine, that might be too much for you to drink 5-6 cups of wine because you forgot to lean. In fact, the more cups of wine that you drink, the more you're probably going to forget to lean, in which case it will become a nasty cycle, and we don't want that to happen. Okay, so you say Kiddush Shechianu, wine, lean to the left. You have to wash without a bracha. We do. Then you have karpas, as I mentioned. There are many people who say you should have less than a kazayit. I don't know exactly how much that is, but a little teeny bit. There are those who say, no, you can have as much as you want. That's my custom based on the Rambam. And more people, I think that's become popular. In fact, every year there are people who talk about this, the myriad of the appetizer course, because karpas probably was an appetizer course. In the Roman times, when the Mishnah was written, was put together, so they would have an appetizer course before they went in to have the proper meal. If that's the case, so go ahead, have a salad course. I know I saw someone who, because they wanted to dip, so you have karpas and dip it in salt water. That's the custom. It's not actually what the Talmud says. The Mishnah brings up maybe dipping in charoset, but we've retracted from that of dipping in charoset because you have charoset later on. But you can dip in other things. I know people who one of the things you're excited about was they had strawberries dipped in chocolate and bananas dipped in chocolate. And if that floats your boat, then great. You do that too. We don't do that. We usually have potatoes and carrots and celery or whatever and some dips. If you want to have bananas in, I don't know what you dip bananas in, but whatever you dip bananas in, you could do that as well. But the classic minhag, of course, is salt water. Then the halachmanya. Halachmanya is actually a late addition. One of the interesting things you'll notice is the beginning of the Haggadah, beginning of the story section, which is again a fulfillment of a Torah law, the beginning of the Haggadah, halachmanya, is in Aramaic. And the last song that's popularly sung, Chagad, is also in Aramaic. So the whole Haggadah is kind of like sandwiched between Aramaic experiences and the rest is all Hebrew. I don't know what that means, if it means anything. I'm sure you can come up with something your Seder and make a big deal about saying things in Aramaic. And those of you who did Daf Yomi learned in Brachot that the angels don't hear Aramaic. I don't know if that's what we do it. There are positions say Halachmanya, which concludes in Hebrew, was said in Aramaic, but then the Hebrew was said in, so the people in Babylonia wouldn't understand what the Jews were saying, that they want to go back to Eretz Yisrael, they were Zionists, I don't know. Whatever it is, it is. But what's critical here is pointing to the matzah and Halachmanya sets up the fact that we're going through a series of stages. In the beginning, the matzah represents lechem oni, bread of affliction, bread of poverty, bread for poor people, which indeed in Egypt and even today, like scraps of bread are still considered for poor people, all the way to the end of the Haggadah when we eat matzah as a symbol of freedom. That's the bread they took out with them. So matzah has two valences, and as you march through the Haggadah, you're kind of going closer and closer to the freedom. Manishtana, the Seder must begin with questions. It doesn't have to be the Manishtana, but that's the popular one, especially if you know the songs. If you have little kids, they're great. If not, that's also okay. The Rambam, in fact, seems to imply that the reader of the Haggadah would say the Manishtana, but it doesn't have to be Manishtana. It has to be some sort of questions, but that's the classic text. The main part of the story of Magid has four sections. The mitzvah, according to the Mishnah, is to begin with disgrace and conclude in praise. There are disagreements on what the disgrace is. We do three of them, or three kind of stories about the Jewish people. Avadim Hayinu, and that's required. That's one position of defining disgrace. We were slaves, and then eventually we were free. That's the story of physical redemption. Optionally, if you want to, and if you want to follow the whole Haggadah as it's printed, you can tell the stories of Rabbi Zimbun Abrach, the bright of the four sons, which I think, you know, everybody does that. You know, no one skips that. Even though it seems, interestingly enough, it did not appear in the Haggadot in Eretz Yisrael, even though it does appear in the Yerushalmi and appears in early Palestinian texts, but it doesn't appear for some reason those Haggadot don't have it, but everybody says the four sons. So while it's optional, that's like a bummer to skip that. No one would want to skip that. The second part of fulfilling from disgrace to praise is the story of Rav, that our ancestors were idol worshippers, which starts out Metzchila. Probably it was originally Bitzchila. Originally our ancestors were idol worshippers, and then God brought us close. Then, and that's required because that's fulfillment according to Rav's position in the Gemara on what a Seder is. Then the Mishnah explicitly says you have to tell the story from the bringing of the Bikurim of the first fruits. That's in Dvarim 26. You have to read those. So you have to read those psukim. There are four verses we read about bringing the Bikurim. If you want to read if you don't want to read the explications of it, in other words, it has to be some sort of drasha, has to be something derived from that little paragraph. If you want to drive your own stuff, you can do that as well. You can just learn it, right? You can present it and then learn it out. But if not, you just follow what Haggadah says, but that's required. Then we would, again, that's to read the Midrash. Plagues, No one wants to skip the plagues. I mean, that's like the fun part. One of the things that we do is we always have these plastic animals and stuff that we all throw around and, you know, making the thing exciting. You know, it's always hard to keep making it exciting. And the first time we got animals was very exciting. And the second time we got masses of animals, it's even more exciting. But, you know, we've done other things as well to make the plague part fun. And I think that's just an important thing to do. A lot of people like to do. Then Dainu, optional. You don't have to say it. Everybody likes to say it, so you're probably going to say it. But what is not optional, so again, the dots are not optional. Rangam Leo, Mishlo Amar, Shosmar, Melu, Logosad, Echavato, Ezlohen, Pesach Matzah, Maror. You have to mention those three things and why we do them. And then in every generation, and Hallel is a rabbinic mitzvah, as we discussed before. And then you finish with the bracha on the second cup, lean to the left. And again, 1.5 ounces or half, a little over half the cup, or preferably the whole cup. Washing hands with blessing. Matzah. I want to discuss matzah because people get confused about this. I have to like do a little something here so I can see myself for clarity's sake. Okay, I want to talk about this. Really, there's a discrepancy or a disagreement whether there should be two matzahs or three matzahs. Rambam's position is there's two matzahs, but most, even the Sfardim in general, hold by three matzahs. They're nice little things about them representing Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, or Kohanim, Levim, and Israel. Those are all very nice, and in fact, some of the poskim refer to them as the Kohen matzah, the Levi matzah, and the Israel matzah. Whatever it is, you have three matzahs. I hope this is clear. You can see them. I'll spread the books out. You have three matzahs. One, two, three. Now, the reason we have three matzahs is by the middle of the Seder, matzah number two, you split in half at Yachatz. So there's only half a matzah here. That half a matzah is the matzah of Lechemoni. That's the matzah of the poor people. Poor people don't eat their whole portion at one time. They'll distribute it. There's all the stories in the Holocaust about, you know, people ate quickly, then they would be hungry later on. So if you divided up your stuff, you're never really full, but you know, you had food for later. Poor people try and work out rations. In Israel, there was some crazy, I don't think this is going to happen, but there was some discussion about, well, if we really want to keep people out of the grocery stores, let's start rationing food by giving out army rations. I've not heard that they're really coming through with that. In fact, the person who suggested it from the health ministry, I think was fired. But in any event, I've not heard that they're doing that. There's plenty of food in Israel. I know it's some places there isn't plenty of food, but there is plenty of food in Israel. They have not had an issue. But here we have three matzahs. One, two, three. This is half. Okay. When you say the brachot, there are three brachot that you're going to say, or there are two brachot you're going to say. The one of them, the first bracha is a motzi lechem min aretz. Now that. Really, we should have two matzahs. Why two? Because you have to have lecha mishnah for the chag. You have to have two loaves of bread, and that's why you have two full loaves of bread for the chag. The Rambam holds you only need to have one and a broken one because it's two minus. The most poskim hold you have to have three minus. So we have two for the mitzvah of lecha mishnah, and then one's going to be really kind of for Pesach. So what you do is you say a motzi lechem min aretz, and that goes with two matzahs. Then drop this matzah. Every year I have to go with this with my kids, and you only have two matzahs in your hand. See the two haggadot, the two matzahs, and you say alach matzah, and you take part of this one and part of this one, and you lean to the left and you eat it. Okay, so three matzahs, hamotzach min aretz, drop the bottom one. You have the broken part and the whole one, and that is the mitzvah of matzah. And you take and break and you say alcha matzah, break off the top, break off the bottom, and you're ready to go. Okay, that's how we do motzi matzah. We washed, We had maror, the korach sandwich. You have maror, you don't lean. Two pieces of lettuce should be fine for that. And you have korach. Now, once you see how motzach ben aretz, you're not supposed to speak. And yet in the Haggadot, they have this thing where you announce before korach that this is what Hillel did. In my family, what we do is we say that afterwards, just so that you feel like you don't have to speak between eating, between when you say amotzi, or when you wash your hands, you say amotzi, and then you do all those mitzvot, and then at the very end you can mention the Hillel and the korach sandwich. So you really shouldn't talk from the time you wash your hands. When you're talking to wash your hands, it says washing hand up, but you shouldn't talk from the time you wash your hand up through all these mitzvot. Okay, then you have your meal. That's not obligatory. Some people have, that's when they have the eggs and dipping it in salt water. That's a very nice thing to do. It's not obligatory at all. And then you can have, if you have, whatever you have, roast beef or chicken, or if you're vegetarian stuff. Okay. And then you have afikomen, which leads to the left and have the amount, like I said before, between 1.5 and 3/4 of a machine matzah. We're almost done. You say birkat hamazon, holding the cup of wine, lean to the left, drink the cup of wine. According to Rabbi Haftig, you have to say shvok hamatcha. Next week, the yeshiva is going to sponsor, Professor Katchen is going to talk about the history of shvok hamatcha. It's a late addition to the Haggadah. I don't know why he said it's required. It's not required. But it's very common. You open the door and say shvok hamatcha. Halal is required, finishing off halal, and the fourth cup of wine. All those songs in the end, none of them are required. So if you want to say those songs, that's great. If you don't, you don't have to. My family, we usually say like two of them. We don't say all of them. I know in Chutz Aretz, they split them, the Haggadot. Like I grew up in Maxwell House and said, on this night you do this, on that night you do the other thing. You can do that, whatever you want, but they're not obligatory. And now that's it. We've done the whole, gone through the entire Seder. And if there are any questions, I'm happy to answer any questions on running Seder. We've covered a lot. Halakha, the various pieces of it, whatever you want. I guess you could wave at me and I can unmute you or something. Or I don't know. Can you unmute yourself? You can. Okay. Any questions?
Brennan.
Yeah.
Also, I came about halfway in, so I don't know if you would have covered this. But I have a question about halal and in general, it doesn't really apply to Birkat Hamazon. But like, I'm more obviously.
Jonathan, was that you who was trying to volunteer for the MC stuff?
Yes.
Have you found anything?
Working on it.
Good for you. Go you. That's a wonderful thing. I have a friend who is a doctor in Connecticut somewhere, and they said that they're asking to volunteer doctors because they don't have enough doctors and a bunch of volunteers, 25 doctors volunteer. It's crazy. Just crazy. Okay, yeah, I'm sorry.
No, it's all good. My skill set is somewhat limited, but doing my best. Okay, no, question about halal. I think most people are much more used to singing halal in a shul, like with a minion, with, like a very organized situation. Like, how does it work around the table? Like, first of all, do you need to separate men and women? And is it like one person leads and like the same way that you would sort of sing in a shul?
So really, if you notice, the poskim will suggest that it's preferable to have, they say three people. When they say three people, they mean three men. Now, the Mishnah says if you're by yourself, you're having a Seder by yourself, so you still have to ask yourself questions. You still have to say Hallel or whatnot. If there are two people, so one really should lead and the other person answer. You don't have to have a minion. It's not like synagogue. I know there are many places that have a custom of saying Hallel at shul on Seder night. In Israel, that's an ubiquitous custom. In America, I think it's mostly Nusach Sfard, but in Israel, it's extremely common. And I know in America, Shachter came out and said that if you daven at home, which like we will, then you should not have it at shul. But at the Seder, you have to have it. That's part of the Seder, is having it. So if you have two people, then one person should be the leader and one person should answer those parts that, you know, normally answer. But yeah, as you should.
And not that there's going to be anyone else in my house this year, but would separating men and women apply?
Oh, I guess it depends on how liberal you are. In some circles, it definitely would apply, and they would not have the women sing. This is not the direction I was planning to go into, but we can. That's the famous shuva by the Sridi Ace, where he relying on the Stei Chemet. I'm looking at my Stei Chemet. Not ignoring you guys. I'm looking at my Stei Chemet on the shelf over there, on the other side of the room. The Stei Chemet, who was I think it was Bukharin originally, Posek, who eventually became he was the chief rabbi of Hebron before the state of Israel was created, one of the great post-game encyclopedic knowledge. So in his Sefer, which is huge, so he points out that in Shirot v'Tishbachot, the whole issue of Kol Isha does not apply. So he argues that most post-game say that, again, in regards to songs, doesn't apply. The Sridi Eish relies on that for all the joint groups, and I think that's like the common position within the more modern Orthodox circles. So I in my family, remember, there are only two men in my family, and there are eight women. So it'll be 10 of us at the Seder, and we'll have a Zimun, but it'll be a women's Zimun, not a men's Zimun. I usually lead Hallel, much to the chagrin of some of my daughters who feel that other people sing better than I do. We've been leading Kabbalat Shabbat. We've been having family Kabbalat Shabbat, which is really nice for the past 3 weeks. It was, and family Kriya Satara, you know, it's not really Kriya Satara, there's no brachot or anything. Those of us who lane, those of us who read. That's what you would do. You would have one leader and everyone else answer if you can. If you want to have two leaders, you can do that too. I don't think that's a problem. Other questions? Yeah. Can you unmute yourself, Adam, or you are unmuted? Good.
Yeah. Okay. You can hold down the space bar to temporarily unmute and then let go when you're done. It's great.
Unmute who? That unmutes yourself, everybody? Or
yourself only. No.
What?
So when I hold down the space bar, it only unmutes me. So
oh, God. Okay. Yofi. Okay, great.
And then when I'm done, I let go.
Okay.
My question is, let's say in terms of preparing, you read up, let's say, a commentary on the Haggadah in advance. So you have what to think about and maybe what to say. How do you do that in a way that provides stimulating discussion for the Seder table without it just turning into you interrupting everyone to give a Dvar Torah every so often?
That's like a hard question to answer because it's going to come down kind of to everybody's skill set and not being annoying. You know, so while it's always good that, you know, the some people want to give Divrei Torah, in certain contexts that might be appropriate. I can tell you what we do in my family is one. We do try and get everybody to ask questions. One of the ways that we do that is we give out candy. So the little kids want to do that and make it a competition. Everyone's kind of off there. Everyone's kind of excited. Not everybody. Some of the kids are less into it, but the majority are into it. We try and always make it as discussion-based as possible. In my family, we often try and make it towards the kids, and it seems to slip into deep theological discussions. Which are usually good and not always, but rarely do we make it into I think the Divrei Torah should be responses to natural questions or saying, you know, something brief that, oh, this is really interesting, something I came across. Like often, you know, if someone had prepared and they came across something really exciting, so, you know, they want to share it. But I think the key at the Seder is to try and make it responsive to either various questions or to evoke those. Remember, it's an interesting learning experience. So you're in this environment, which is very structured, but you want it to be enjoyable and you want it to be learning. And if you can finesse getting people to think, the Sfas Emes, I meant to start with this last MS, but I'll give two. I'll give the one I was going to end with, and I'll go back to the one I was going to end with. Svas MS says, why Yisrael Gadol begins with questions is because what happens is you basically create a hole in your heart, and it always, when you want something to ingest, when you want something so badly to ingest it, it becomes more part of you spiritually. There's another Svas MS I meant to mention at the beginning, but I was a little pressed to get the PowerPoint done, in which case I forgot that I was going to say this. The beautiful Svas MS where he says, in the Haggadah we say, you know, they want to destroy us, but God took us out, and had God not taken us out, we say in Dayenu, then we would still be there. And it's thanking God for removing us from Egypt. And he says, you know, in the beginning of the 19th century in Poland, it's like, we're oppressed. We're living in a suppressed society. What do we do? So how can we say that if God had not taken us out, we wouldn't be free, but we're not free? So he suggests that the freedom, the difference is there's a psychological reality to the experience of the slaves in Egypt. And that when God took them out, that changed the psychological reality to say, hey, this is who I'm not. A slave person, I am a person who can be free. And because that became kind of quintessential to our story of who we are. So even living in Poland, he could say that. So I was thinking about that this year, where many people are going to feel very enslaved. Like, what do you mean we're free? We're locked in. I see people even chomping at the bit saying, you know, it's not right. The government's locking us in. All the governments, you know, are locking us in because of what's going on. But nonetheless, the aspect to it that we celebrate the idea that you're free. By the way, it's interesting. I heard that Jews, when they came, one of the reasons that Jews were successful when the waves of immigration flooded into America was because there were these things called Landsmannschaften, where people would get hired by people from their shtetl. So you land on the Lower East Side, and you know you were looking for a job. So some guy from who you knew, or you knew his cousin or something, hired you, and now you're working for him. But the Jews, as opposed to, I guess, certain other people within the worldview, they said, well, hey, this guy came from a shtetl just like me. And if this guy can start a company, why can't I start my own company? I'm as smart as, you know, Schmerl Barrel over there is. So I'll work for him for 2 years and I'll go break off and start my own competing company. And that kind of, I think the whole idea that you can break off from where you are and say, I don't have to be this way, which is a total break, by the way. It's kind of like one of the symbols of modernity is hardwired into the Haggadah experience. We can be different. We can change things. We can, you know. So even the Svas MS could say, I'm a slave there. We stuck in our houses for the first time, like locked in like this. You know, I imagine at the Kosher Eliyahu, when they open the door for Eliyahu and pour that cup, that people are going to scream out, you know, at least in my neighborhood. The windows will all open and everyone's going, yeah, yeah. And now everyone will probably be synchronized as other things are, but. Other questions? Yeah, everybody's good?
I had a small question. I just wanted to know, Berman, if you'd be able to email out the PowerPoint later.
Wait, who said that?
That was me.
Who's me?
You can't see my camera. There you are.
Oh, there you are. Sure. What I'll do, I can email it. I can, it might be easier to post it somewhere. So maybe I, if you, tomorrow I will, if you, these are recorded and then we post them on the eretzpod.org site. I don't know if you guys all know about that, but you should know about that, Eretzpod. So we post an Eretzpod. I'll put a link. I'll figure out a way to upload it and then put a link to the PowerPoint. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Thank you.
That's probably how I'll do it, and because there is a way to do a link easily, and when I upload it tomorrow, it's too late for me to upload it tonight. When I upload it tomorrow, I'll put a link to the PowerPoint. I'll upload it. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else? By the way, in there, I'll also put a link to the free Haggadah websites because that's just great, especially the one by the Jewish Agency, which is like 20 Haggadot, which are ready down low with lots of commentaries. And if you're bored over the next few days, you totally can do that. Okay, guys, it was great. Let me figure out how I go next. No, I don't want that. I am to review. Okay. Thank you very much for coming, and everyone have a great Pesach, as celebratory as you can with whomever you are. Make it as enjoyable as you can. Be it two people, be it 10 people, and everyone have a Chag Kasher v'Sameach, and stay healthy.